Thank you. I was actually on my way to Sinterklaas, so it was really a very, very Dutch picture. Dear fellow speech writers, it was October 2023, and I was having goodbye drinks with my colleagues from the Ministry of Finance, where I had worked as a speechwriter for 5 years. Sigrid Kaag, then still the Dutch Minister of Finance and Deputy Prime Minister, now Special Envoy for Gaza, made a brief speech, all by herself, so she didn't need me after all. She encouraged me in her speech to start using my own voice and tell my own story in future, instead of just writing other people's stories. So here I stand today, telling you, the best speechwriters from around the globe, my own story in my own words. The motto, you have to aim for the stars, has always been my guiding principle for a reason. That guiding principle is also why I began my career as speechwriter for the Prime Minister of the Netherlands. I was 29 years old, barely out of diapers, when I started working for the man in the Little Tower, which is actually the nickname of the working office of the Dutch Prime Minister, although it sounds like something completely different. Back in 2013, when I started working there, the man taking office in the Little Tower was Mark Rutte. It was a dream come true. A dream because writing for the Prime Minister means writing about everything. Everything from a commemoration in the parliament for a deceased former Prime Minister, to welcoming Olympic medal winners back to the Netherlands, to the press conferences when flight MH17 was shut down and 196 Dutch people died. I learned that in writing for the Prime Minister, you are dealing with both an institution and a person. When I started, I was completely in awe of the institution. I thought that writing for the Prime Minister meant writing in a very formal, dignified manner, with quite complex language. And for some occasions, that is what you are supposed to do. But on other occasions, you have to know the person you are dealing with. Mark Rutte is famous for trying to be as normal can be. He greets everyone with, hey, hi, how are you? And uses words as ontzettend gaaf, which translates as something like insanely cool. So writing for him means writing in a direct and sometimes somewhat jovial, popular way. On top of that, I learned that you can also learn some life lessons from your speaker. I learned from Mark Rutte that it isn't really a big deal at all to stand here today in front of an international office, an international audience, and talk with a horrific Dutch accent. He did that all the time. I loved writing for the Prime Minister, and as said, I learned a lot. But after 5 years of writing about how amazing and important entrepreneurs are, that in fact they are the foundation on which our society thrives, and how tasty Indonesian food is, I was longing for a new story. It was 2018, and after 8 years of Mark Rutte as Prime Minister, I reckoned that a new Prime Minister would not be that far away. So I would be able to tell another person's story. Little did I know that as I stand here today on April 18th, 2024, Mark Rutte is still in the Little Tower. Although there is a fair chance he will leave to become the Secretary General of the NATO, instead of the humble teacher he always claimed he would become. Not leaving at a high, but at a low. After the fall of his last cabinet, there is still no new coalition. This new government in the making will almost certainly have an impact on the careers of the governmental speechwriters. I want to talk about that first, and then about something completely different, the need to pay attention not only to the speech or the pen, but also to the presentation or the podium. So today I will tell you two stories. One is a story about a small country with a global reputation for tolerance, innovative spirit, and an international outlook. A country which is now also a front runner alongside Italy and Hungary, but this time in electing a populist and right-wing party as the biggest in the parliament. Or, as Brian put it when we talked about my contribution today, please tell the public what the hell is happening in the Netherlands. Well, of course, as a true Englishman, he did not use those words. The other is a story about a young woman, well, 40 years next month, who lives and works in that country, and who after years and years of mastering the art of writing perfect speeches, with the exact right words in the exact right spots, focusing for hours on commas and periods, realizes that the speaker she is working for can shatter that perfect text to pieces with a very shitty presentation. But first, let's look at that small country that for years now has been lost in populism, with manic voters running after the newest popular kid on the block every new election. Voters who, in the latest election of November, made the Freedom Party of Geert Wilders the biggest in parliament. Geert Wilders is internationally known as, according to Italian newspaper La Repubblica, the blonde Dutch Trump. He is also known for his anti-Islam comments. For example, wanting to ban the Quran and wanting to end immigration from Muslim countries. He persisted in calling my former boss Sigrid Kaag a witch. He is now trying to form a cabinet with the Farmer Citizen Movement, a populist party that stands up for the interests of farmers. And with New Social Contract, a new political party which is formed around one man, Pieter Omtzigt. And also with Mark Rutte's party, VVD, the Liberal Party, who now have a new leader because Mark Rutte is becoming a teacher, a NATO chief. It means there's a big chance that a right-wing coalition will be formed in which a Freedom Party will play a leading role. Something that had long been unthinkable in the Netherlands, being one of Western Europe's most liberal countries. That's not my opinion, but that of the New York Times. So Dutch governmental speechwriters are now awaiting this new cabinet, which we will never know for certain will see the light of day until it does. And in the meantime, they are still working for cabinet members of the Rutte cabinet. Speechwriters in The Hague are not connected to a political party. They work for the ministry. As a civil servant, you are supposed to be neutral, and you must be able to work for a cabinet member regardless of his or her political background. My esteemed colleague René Broekmeulen questioned last year whether speechwriters should write for everyone or make ethical decisions about who they want to write for. These questions are even more relevant today. And I don't want to take a political stance here, so these are open questions. Can you write for someone who is a member of a party that uses hateful rhetoric and discriminates people because of their religion? Does it matter if this party withdraws some of its positions for the sake of forming a government? Does it make a difference when a party forms a government with other political parties, and that you are writing for that government about their coalition view, which is not the same as the political party program? Does it matter which person you have to write for? Does it matter if the person is extreme right-wing, but very nice? What happens if lots of civil servants leave the government because they do not want to work for members of a certain party? And does it help or hurt when you soften and normalize their words? What if you switch jobs and a couple of weeks later this already seemingly unstable cabinet falls? A key question is also, who will be the prime minister of this cabinet? Because Geert Wilders already made it public that it won't be him. I think the Prime Minister will be crucial in how this new cabinet will turn out. Or more important, which cardboard figure does Brian has to invest in for the next conference? I think there are no simple answers to these questions. But they are relevant not only in the Netherlands, because a right-wing populistic wave is washing over many countries in Europe. And in countries where extreme right-wing or populist politicians come to power, you can also see that extremist positions are quickly taken over by more moderate compromises, because reality and international agreements stand in the way. But that reality doesn't always match the rhetoric these politicians in power keep using. And as a speechwriter, you are responsible for the rhetoric part. Political deal-making or selling an idea to the citizens is also about finding the right words. Do you want to be the one to find those words? To be honest, for me it helps that after 5 years of writing for Mark Rutte and 5 years of writing for the Ministry of Finance, I decided to work for the woman who I admire the most, which is myself. So I don't have to decide if I do or don't want to write for a minister from a radical right party. Working for myself was not per se a dream come true, as working for the Prime Minister was. I never really thought about it before. But it turned out to be a blessing. A blessing because of the diversity. Because of bringing all the lessons I learned at the departments in The Hague into practice in organizations where people sometimes aren't that used to speechwriters and welcome it as the greatest luxury. It gives me the freedom to work with clients that fit me and fit my ideals. I can help organizations like the Council for Refugees to get their message across. And it gives me the freedom to work with clients that fit, to be more than only a speechwriter. And that brings me to the second part of my story. That is about my opinion that every speechwriter should also be a presentation coach. Because when you have written that perfect populist speech, it would be a pity if your speaker doesn't light up the room when delivering it. I remember from even before I was a speechwriter, I did a short internship as a spokesperson for a ministry. And the minister had to make a speech. The speechwriter emailed me the text beforehand. It was beautiful. The content, the rhythm, everything matched. I went to the event, and the speechwriter told me before the minister never had any comments and always read the text word for word from paper. Sounds like a speechwriter's dream, you'd think. But when the minister came up, he put his paper in front of him, he looked at them to read aloud the speech, and never looked at the audience again. He spoke softly, but also apparently in some sort of rush. His voice flat, the beautiful text became totally incomprehensible. Later, working as a speechwriter myself, I came across speakers who wanted to practice the speech. One minister wanted to practice for a speech that would be live on television. Another minister was very keen on practicing and came up with the idea of doing monthly sessions, where we would evaluate his speeches from that month and practice the ones ahead. But also, and that was the case with most of the speakers, we would schedule time to practice an important speech, and last minute, the speaker would skip it due to more important business. Or the practice session in reality would be spent on further improving, or sometimes worsening, the text of the speech. It came to intrigue me that we as speechwriters spend so much time on the text and so little time on the presentation, while the presentation or the delivery is responsible for half or maybe even more of the success, and is vital in how well the speaker gets the message across. Also, I wanted to be able to offer some tools to actually help speakers with their presentation. Of course, as a speechwriter, you are always able to help the speaker because you know the text so well. You know where accents are needed, you know when to pause or stay silent a little longer, but I wanted more. That's why I followed a program at the School for Presentation Coaching to become a certified presentation coach and trainer. First lesson at the school. If you want to give a good presentation, you should never read aloud from a written text, also known as a speech. Also known as those things that we write all the time to make a living. I wanted to walk out of the room, but I didn't. And luckily so, because I did learn a lot. I became a presentation coach that now helps people with their presentation. And the good thing is, to be a presentation coach, you don't have to be good at doing presentations yourself. But still, it can be a bit of a stretch, because I myself, and I think I can speak for other people in the audience, find a lot of comfort in sitting pleasantly introverted behind my desk, in my old sweater, I don't always wear dresses, thinking, writing, and rewriting. Presentation coaching is a way more extrovert way to spend your time, which takes a while to feel at ease with. But during my training in presentation coaching, I found out that in fact, it is not. It is not an extrovert activity, because it is the other person, the speaker, who has to do the hard work. Your role is to sit back, observe, share your observations, and let the speaker do the work again. The best coach is a coach who isn't working too hard, but who is observing in the moment. And helps the speaker not only with presenting, but also in their journey of discovering where their vulnerabilities in speaking lie. I think that almost everyone recognizes the fact that standing in front of a group is something else than just having a conversation in the coffee corner. It is interesting how just standing up and saying something can already feel completely different from staying in your chair. In presentation coaching, I learned that there is no such thing as a perfect speaker, or something like a format or a template that fits every speaker. If you speak at this pace or hold your hands like that, then your presentation will be perfect. On the contrary, we might feel repulsed by perfect speakers because they seem not real to us. We don't trust them. are they trying to sell us something or convince us of something we don't want? We want speakers to be authentic, to stand in front of the audience as themselves. Then we can believe them. So, that is easy. Just stand in front of an audience and be yourself. Sadly enough, for most persons, including myself, this is not easy at all. From a young age on, although the very young in my experience as a mother of three daughters are in fact exhibitionists, we start to feel uncomfortable standing in front of a group, at least in continental Europe. I'm thinking that maybe in the United States and Britain it's a little bit different. In covering up our unease, we can choose from a big menu of tactics. Hiding yourself behind a lecture, speaking very softly, avoiding contact with the public, talking very loudly, not moving at all, being overly jovial and making loud jokes, or for me, constantly playing with my hair. The options are endless. They can be very subtle or not subtle at all, but they stand in the way of being yourself on stage. They are not the person who is sitting at the dinner this evening being his or her bubbly self. That bubbly self on stage can, of course, be gesturing vigorously, laughing a lot, or be a force of calm and peacefulness, if that is who you are. I have met a lot of speakers who can be very charming when talking to them in person, but who stiffen in front of a public. Political speakers sometimes even more, because they are too much on guard, afraid of using a wrong word, which can be fatal in politics. So why do we believe certain speakers, and why do we find other speakers fake, too slick or robot-like? It's again about authenticity. Do you believe that this is a version of you on that stage? Is Donald Trump a good speaker? I think by most of our standards, he is not. He jabbers around, he is rude. It sometimes feels like listening to a stream of consciousness. Do we believe it is him on that stage? I think we can also agree that we certainly do. Even so, much of his attraction to the voters is that he does not give speeches or that he debates along the lines of our rhetorical discourse. He does not play the games by the rules we thought we as a civilization, or according to some, we as a malicious elite, agreed on. It makes him different and real and appealing to a growing public. Recently, international speakers who are widely applauded get that recognition because they are real. They feel and know their story. We believe it is theirs when they speak it aloud. That counts for Donald Trump, but also for a much more inspiring example to me, Jacinda Ardern, former Prime Minister of New Zealand, who put humanity, her own, and that of the citizens of New Zealand at first, not only in her policy, but also in her speeches. When she speaks, you feel it is her story. These are her words. And there lies a difficulty and a challenge for us as speech writers, because it is inherent in our jobs that the speech is never completely that of the speaker. Although we, as professionals, are, of course, close to 99%. The better we manage to use the words of our speaker, the more the speaker can come across as authentic. The more a speaker's personality shines through in the text, the more authentic the speech feels. Not only in words, but also in presentation. Most of the time, when you say something personal, your facial expressions improve, your ability to connect improves. You become more real on stage because you can feel the text, other than a story full of policy speak. So, in being better writers, we can also be better presentation coaches for our speakers, and vice versa. We can coach them through that perfect fitting text. Dear speech writers, that's why my speech for you today is also a call to action, which comes in handy because one of the top 10 ways to end your speech is with a call to action. I ask you to not only focus on the pen, not only focus on the text, not only focus on that perfect speech, but also focus on the podium, on the performance, on the way the text is presented to the public. And if speech writing is taken over by ChatGPT, which I have to thank for coming up with the title of my speech today, or if politics is taken over by populists that you don't want to write for, then please become teachers or NATO chiefs, because the world needs them. Thank you.